Hello, everyone. This is Dark Journalist. Tonight, I have a very special and timely interview for you with Oxford scholar and Giza Death Star book series author, Dr. Joseph Farrell. Dr. Farrell will take a deep look at the pressing movement towards activating a continuity of government emergency in the guise of a CIA Department of Homeland Security manufactured UFO threat. Will the NORTHCOM commander take charge to rescue a failing Biden presidency? Please join us now.
All right.
Great to see you.
Okay, good to see you, sir.
So there's so much going on, and I really want to jump in on the UFO committee hearings that they had in Congress, not because of the kind of standard fluff on the front, you know, like, oh, we don't know what UFOs are, but we're going to start calling them UAP instead. There's a lot of progress there.
Yeah, change the term. And advance the discussion exactly zero.
That seems, but there's one moment in there that slipped in. You got a congressman from Illinois, and he's asking Motree, who's part of the DOD, hey, you know, maybe we should start prosecuting. There should be penalties for independent people who are analyzing UFOs. And I thought, you know, we've come a long way on the UFO file. They finally figured out, you know, they can't run their narrative if independent people are looking at this. And right. So the response from Motree, you know, of course, he knew the question was coming. He's like, we need to talk to Congress about this. This is a good idea. Make sure there are penalties for those bad people looking at UFOs in the sky. Joseph, what on earth is going on there?
I honestly think it's of a piece, Daniel, with this whole move to shut down discussion across the board.
Yeah.
You know, We're watching a panicked elite. And one of the things that I think, you know, you and I were both at the Bastrop Secret Space Program conference, which was the second of those conferences. And I definitely think that those conferences were beginning to change the conference culture.
Secret Space Conference.
The Secret Space Program conferences, because The organizers of those two events, and I'm going to toot my horn here because I think I had something to do with it. I told them, do not invite the regular ufology divas.
Mm-hmm.
Invite people that actually have something to say. Invite Brandenburg. Invite Michael Schratt. Invite, you know, Mark McCandlish and people that have looked at this from very, very different perspectives, Catherine Fitz and so on. And I think that as a result of those two conferences, there was a momentum building to take ufology in a very different direction than had hitherto been taken. Because you were dealing with serious researchers that had something to say, and they weren't following just the ET narrative or the crash retrieval narrative. That was certainly part of it, but it wasn't an exclusive thing. And the one thing that we managed to avoid, and I told them also to avoid this like the plague, avoid those people that want to tell about their abduction experience.
Mm-hmm.
You need hard nuts and bolts speculation, argued speculation, rather than storytelling.
Interesting. Yeah.
And so what are we getting now with this latest flap in Congress? What we're getting is a revived version of the ET narrative.
Yes.
And again, we have to remember that this was a narrative that began to be put out in the 50s when the CIA began U-2 flights.
Right.
So in other words, the ET narrative was in one instance, at one level, designed to cover up advanced technology and its use.
Right.
So I think you're dealing with a bit of that. So they want now this push to criminalize anybody that thinks for themselves on the subject. If they are able to do that on an issue that apparently is not going to affect the general population. In other words, I believe that they're also using this as a wedge issue. Mm-hmm. So that they can then say, well, we've established that precedent here. with something that the vast majority of people don't even think about.
Right.
If we can do that here, then we've got the camel's nose in the tent, and we can do it for other more critical and more immediate issues. So I can't tell people how upsetting that is. It is an abrogation of our God-given First Amendment rights, period. End of discussion. This government is out of control, and it's not going to stop. It's not going to stop.
Yeah, reaching into so many different areas.
Yes.
And the co-opting of the UFO thing with the threat.
Right. And they could use that as a national security umbrella, you know. Well, right. You can't discuss any technologies that you think might be involved in the UFO.
Right.
And it doesn't matter if our speculations, you know, are absurd and out there. I mean, read some of my stuff. It's absurd and out there. Okay. But the problem is it's still a speculation that might contain, you know, possibilities that they don't want to see out there. So this is the problem. They can shut down virtually anything mm-hmm. in the guise of regulating speech about UFOs. No, can't allow it. Ain't going to happen.
Absolutely fascinating. That co-opting and where they did it. First of all, they held the hearings as part of the counterterrorism. Homeland Security section. Uh-huh. Totally different from you do like a science division, a research division, even a DOD division, but uh-huh. Homeland Security. Uh-huh. And then so now DHS, they want to move in on the UFO thing and be like, oh, it's a national security DHS issue. We get to, surveil the citizens and we get to shut off any kind of communication. What you just said about advanced technology, that's really what they don't want people talking
that's
about.
That's really what they don't want people talking about. And here's the other problem. If they're casting this as a national security counterterrorism issue, mm-hmm. that's also prepping a particular kind of narrative with respect to ET.
Right.
So in other words, they could come along in 5 or 10 years, and I don't put anything past this crowd. They are out of control, they are evil, and they are insane. Okay, right. Let me repeat that just for the record. They are out of control, they are insane, and they are evil. There. All right, now, they're prepping a narrative here, in my opinion, because they can then go on to say, well, yes, we've had contact with ET, and they look like us, walk like us, and quack like us, and they're infiltrating the government, and now we need to institute some rather severe security measures, like you off to the reservation in, you know, some horrid dry place in the American Southwest you go.
Right.
And they may be telling the truth, and they may not be telling the truth, and we'll never know.
Right. You could actually have them as the aliens doing that to regular human beings.
And precisely, we don't know. You know, they're prepping a narrative. You know,
they're coming in through the UFO part.
Yes.
Space, the UFO piece. They feel, well, you know, we've had 80 years of managing this narrative. We can probably roll with this. Mm-hmm. It seems to me, though, it's an unusual move, and it does stand out. You know, they had Mike Gallagher, who's the Republican congressman from Wisconsin, and he said, well, UFOs could be us from the future. You know, it's like, what is this, Art Bell, 1995?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's the John Teeter scenario all right. over again, only this time it's made it into Congress.
What's going on there?
Well, again, Daniel, I think these people you're looking at a panicked elite, and they are grasping for everything that's going to maintain their power. Let's go back and mention the report from Iron Mountain.
Yes. Okay.
And I'm fully on board with the people that say it's a hoax, okay? But it's a hoax like the protocols of the learned elders of Zion are a hoax. Mm-hmm. In other words, whoever came up with the document, be it John Kenneth Galbraith or the Russian Tsarist secret police in the protocols case, whoever came up with it, they were also giving you their best estimate of what was really going on. Mm-hmm. Okay. In the case of the report from Iron Mountain, look what you have. You have a nervous group of political elites that are nervous about peace breaking out. So what do we do to maintain our power? Mm-hmm. We invent an environmental crisis. It's mm-hmm. right there in Iron Mountain. We invent pandemics. This is 1965 that the report from Iron Mountain comes out.
Yeah.
And the hoaxer, incidentally, was, some say, John Kenneth Galbraith. Hmm.
Wow. You know,
okay. So environment panics, pandemics, and then they invent the, and what they thought would probably be the most useful was the alien threat.
Interesting.
So, you know, we have a fake report, but we also have, you know, the Rosen affidavit about Wernher von Braun and the ET threat. So, yeah, I think you're looking at a measure of panicked elite. Their narratives aren't working. Have you noticed this?
Yes.
Their narratives simply are not working. They're not getting traction with anything. And the reason why is public trust in the institutions that we are used to dealing with, be it government, church, school, academia, media, whatever, is collapsing mm-hmm. because they have cried wolf one too many times. I don't think that group will ever be able to get any trust back at this point.
Right.
I mean, ET is going to literally have to show up like Independence Day in gigantic flying saucers and blast the daylights out of a couple of cities before, you know, before anybody's going to believe them. And even yeah. then we may not, because look at the propaganda failure that they've had with the war in the Ukraine. Oh, yes. The Ukrainians are just trouncing the Russians. Well, now all of a sudden, the New York Times is backtracking on that big
right. You know. Here's another $40 billion.
Yeah, here's another $40 billion for you, you know, so that you can launder the money and transship the weapons elsewhere, which is what I think is really going on here. Mm-hmm. You know,
that's interesting. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Oh, of course it is. Of course it is.
It's more of a network than
yes.
yeah.
Yeah, the Ukraine itself is not the goal here. It's the transshipment of weapons and money. Yeah, that's all this is.
When you look at that conflict you know, a few months in now mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. the moves by Putin on this and our moves against him, which mm-hmm. even Henry Kissinger comes out and says, oh, it's too inflammatory. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, it's pretty bad when he's doing that. Mm-hmm. And the number of nuclear drills mm-hmm. and the number of, you know, oh, Biden participated in a COG event in case there was a nuclear attack, you know, and this kind of thing floating it out there. You know, that is if he could, you know, even find his suit for that day.
I've got a few suggestions. Maybe a straitjacket would be a place to start. A rubber padded room.
You know, it's interesting. Today, in the middle of one of these kind of, you know, clumsy speeches, they bring up to him, they're like, oh, Elon Musk says the economy is terrible. And like, that's the outlook. And he says, well, tell him good luck going to Mars. I was like, that's weird.
Uh-huh. No, as far as Ukraine goes, I'll tell you my haunting suspicion here. And I just talked about this last week in my news and views. My strong suspicion, Daniel, is they don't have control of the nuclear football.
Mm.
Biden doesn't have control of it.
Well, they talked about a committee taking right. that power, and this was when Biden was getting in and Trump was getting out.
Right.
It was a weird suggestion anyway, and it wasn't a Republican idea.
No, it was Nancy Pelosi's.
So weird. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think they have control of it. And this, if that's the case, just stop and think now. You've got this UFO business in Congress. You've got all of this stuff. You've got all of this distraction. To a certain extent, I think a lot of this is engineered distraction that they're putting out there. Because if they have lost control of the nuclear football, if another group, not Biden or his misadministration, has control of that, then you're dealing with a continuity of government scenario already.
Right.
And the real spanner in the works here, Daniel, is if that's the case, then they cannot themselves launch a false flag, you know, nuclear false flag, like they've been trying to do. And it also puts the Russians in a bit of a pickle. They don't know who they're dealing with. And if you're in the Russian shoes, then what do? As a response to that, you up the rhetoric.
Right.
And what the Russians have been saying, if in regard to the nuclear scenario, is number one, we will not use tactical nuclear weapons. Number two, if you guys do, we're going to turn the United Kingdom into a radioactive cinder.
Unbelievable.
And we're going to launch nukes against American bases in Europe. What they're really saying is, we know where you live. And if you want, you know, bunker busting cruise missiles coming down on your heads with tactical nuclear warheads, we can arrange that.
Unbelievable. Yeah. It is, like, just the fact that we're in this kind of rhetoric in this unbelievable.
Yeah. And here's another problem, Daniel. Russia has a nuclear first strike capability. We don't. We don't. So this is a delicate situation that Biden and co has got himself into, and that Mr. Globalone has got us into. And I think the problem now is, the reason you're seeing all of this other stuff going on is in part related to this, because they're having to backpedal very quickly. They've gotten us into a mess, and they don't know how to get out of it. That's the other problem.
Wow.
Yeah. This is going to turn into a real mess. And so much the better if in the middle of this situation you clamp down control on the UFO narrative. Because what you're really clamping down control on is anything having to do with space. This is now making the whole realm of outer space, of exotic technologies, a national security issue. And you can't talk about it unless you agree with what we say about it. And I got bad news for him. I ain't agreeing.
Right.
You're going to have to take me out stone cold dead before I shut up about what I think is going on with all of this. Period. End of discussion.
Absolutely. There's a realization in this that for them, there's a danger of people exploring this on their own.
Yes.
For that independent research to be out there, because they can't, they've been trying to co-opt this thing that's already pre-existing. It's out there. Exactly. They've manipulated it over the years, but there's too many people who do this kind of research.
Right.
And they're trying to come in with this smooth thing of like, oh, there's a UFO threat. We'll save you. The CIAs are heroes. So it's interesting because what you're saying about the nuclear part is fascinating, though, because when I look at that, I say to myself, why are they engaging on this level with the nuclear side? And if the nuclear football has been taken away from them, it makes a lot of sense.
Well, there's another thing that implies. If the nuclear football has been taken away from them, then so has any Rod of God technology.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And that's the big one in the mix, in my opinion, because you're dealing with a technology that's practical, feasible, probably has already been deployed to a certain extent, and it's a technology that you can resort to create strategic levels of destruction without having the radioactive blowback. So I think behind the nuclear rhetoric, what you're really seeing is messaging going back and forth between the East and the West. Remember when Trump was president and North Korea was doing what North Korea usually does, there was that general that was asked by the reporter, does this include, you know, we've got every option on the table. And the reporter asked, so that he could be heard, does this include kinetic weapons?
Right.
General response was, yes.
Amazing. Just,
yes, nothing else.
After hiding that for so long.
It's just, after hiding it so long, and now the answer is yes.
Well, this makes me think about some of the things you've mentioned about how they kept the NRO secret for so many years. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so that's a fully functional government entity that nobody had any idea about until the 90s. And this thing started during, you know, just before the Kennedy era.
Yep.
So they have the ability to run that clandestine operation. My question, when I look at it, I'm thinking something about this piece about space, the continuity of government program and the UFO hearings that uncomfortably is fitting together.
Yes.
And this Bilderberg meeting that they have coming up, the one that's going on right on the top of their agenda, is continuity of government and the economy. They're planning to pull that emergency button. That's what it seems like.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt in my mind. You cannot have all of the accidental food processing plant fires that we're having right now.
Right.
One is an accident, two is a coincidence, and three is a pattern.
Yeah.
And we're way beyond three.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, they are deliberately creating supply shortages, food shortages, energy crisis. They are deliberately creating all of this because they're going for the whole shebang.
Wow.
They're going to try and drive a crisis to create a global government. The problem, as I mentioned, is they've tried climate change and that hasn't worked.
Right.
They've tried the pandemic. That didn't work.
Right.
What we've got left is the ET card.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that may work if they are able to pull off, you know, a fake invasion.
Yes.
Lights in the sky and, you know, a couple of devastated cities or whatever. Right. Their problem is... And I go back to what I've said before. Beware of calling down high heaven because the real thing might show up.
That is really interesting. Because, of course, so many of the things that they're doing are they're mimicking what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're getting this kind of parody, just like UFO hearings are a parody of a real thing.
Of a real
thing. What they're concerned, what they like to talk about is, oh, threat this, threat that, because they know how to manufacture that.
Right. And they know how to control those types of narratives.
Right.
But the problem is you can only control a narrative so far until reality impinges. This is the problem with the Ukraine right now. You know, for 4 months, Daniel, we were hearing, oh, the Ukrainians are just heroes and they're mopping up on those witless, clueless Russians. And, you know, the furthest thing was really, you know...
It's devastation.
Yeah, yeah. The Ukrainians are having their clock cleaned, folks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's no other two ways about it. But the propaganda was effective to the extent that when you're dealing with as stupid a people as we've become in the West, it can be effective, and you can control that narrative until reality begins to just seep through, and this is the problem. With the UFO narrative, they're dealing with something that they are very good at controlling. And reality has not yet seeped through enough in that sphere for a lot of people. Now, right. I've seen a UFO, you know, but a lot of people haven't.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, even if they were to see one, have been, I think, so conditioned either to think, okay, that's automatically extraterrestrial and ergo not advanced human technology, or they're conditioned to think that's advanced human technology and ergo not extraterrestrial. So in other words, you know, they've successfully manipulated that old Roswell dialectic into this paradigm where they can control both ends of the narrative. So the only thing that's going to chip away at that narrative is reality. Mm-hmm. That's their biggest fear. So long as they can control that narrative, and hence the push for criminalizing any non-governmental narrative about it, so long as they can control that narrative, they're okay. the move to criminalize to me suggests that they've become desperate. Again, I go back to those secret space program conferences.
Yeah.
A conference culture was beginning to be created that was going to put ufology on a much different footing than what it had been with, you know, the abduction stories and, you know, story after story after story. The latest episode was, as you know, the Blue Chickens episode, you know, the that whole marketing disaster, and that fell apart.
Yeah.
Then you had the Tom DeLonge marketing thing, and again, that fell apart.
Yeah. Elizondo.
Elizondo, yeah. All of that fell apart. So this is the latest step in it. What that tells me is they know that they've got to get a handle on the space narrative, and they've got to do so very quickly. And that tells me that they might be expecting something unpleasant that they cannot control.
Interesting. Like what?
Well, what they're dealing with the UFO, is a real Tower of Babel moment of history. They had to plan for the possibility that there may be another intervention in human affairs as we get close to the technologies of genuine global destruction or even interstellar destruction. The more we get toward that goal, the more susceptible we become to someone else who may be out there monitoring any potential threats.
Right.
So they've got to gain control of that narrative, first of all, for a very simple reason. They have to create the technologies that will convince whomever not to tangle with us, that we can make things very, very difficult for them if, you know, they attempt to intervene here. But in order to create that technology, in the meantime, we have to have maneuvering room. So we have to put it out that, no, we're not capable of any of this sort of stuff. And we have to put it out long enough and control the narrative long enough until we get that technology.
Wow.
You know, it's a real strategic information control conundrum that they were faced with. And this is the latest chapter of it, but it's totally expected if you go back and look at the steps that they took in the 40s and 50s to control all of this.
Interesting.
Now, it's of a piece.
Well, it's this makes the political pressure makes a lot more sense with that in the foreground is the story.
Right.
Here's an interesting thing that I think about with this, which is Department of Homeland Security, again, in the middle of it, NORTHCOM, COG. NORTHCOM is responsible for, you know, NORAD and all those different things having to do with aerospace, defending the homeland, the United States, right? Not, I don't know where they get this homeland thing. But the
Heimat. It's the Reichssicherheit Hauptamt. Come on, we know where it's from.
There's a little German echo in here.
Yeah, there's a little German echo in here.
But this is fascinating because I'm looking at it and I'm thinking threat, alien, NORTHCOM, aerospace. So are we looking at Osama bin Alien? Is that the idea?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If you look at the way they operate, they, as far as I'm concerned, when they're creating a narrative, they try to fly as close to the actual reality as they can. So in other words, if they're taking decisions in the late 40s, early 50s, to develop technologies that can simultaneously confront or deter the communist bloc and deal with a UFO problem, which they obviously have. You know, I mean, you'd have to be witless not to see this. I mean, stop and think. There is a particular junior senator from Wisconsin.
Speaking of Wisconsin.
Speaking of Wisconsin, active in 1952 in Swampington, D.C., and causing all sorts of mayhem for the Truman administration and the Eisenhower administration that's going to come in.
Mr. McCarthy.
Mr. McCarthy. Okay. We know what he stumbles onto. You've read those Monmouth transcripts and what they're implying, very clearly implying. They're implying a UFO problem.
Yes. Okay?
And what happens in 1952 at the height of his power? Well, we've got that big UFO flap.
True.
In Washington, D.C.
Over the Truman White House.
Over the Truman White House, with Air Force generals saying, oh, no, it really didn't happen at all. Do you think for a moment junior senator from Wisconsin is going to leave that one alone?
Wow.
No, of course not.
Yeah.
Of course not.
And with the help of Roy Cohn, as you've pointed out.
Yeah, exactly.
He gets a lot going publicly.
He gets a whole lot going publicly.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's chairman of the Government Operations Committee, for crying out loud. So, yeah, UFOs are going to fall under that bailiwick.
Yeah, right.
So, in other words, what I'm saying is you've got a government that is confronted with, and a deep state is what I mean here by government. I'm not talking about Harry Truman or Dwight Eisenhower. I'm talking about Richard Bissell and Alan Dulles, you know, and that group. You've got a government that's confronted by so many strategic problems. It's got to gain control of the information, particularly about the most important of those strategic problems, which is the UFO.
Right.
And it's got to control that narrative because it has to maintain certain public postures while secretly it's developing technologies to deal with it.
Wow.
And what you're seeing now is nothing different than that. They are letting you know in their roundabout way that they have viewed these things as potential threat. And now that it's under Homeland Security and counterintelligence, what they're also telling you is they may already be here.
Oh.
They've got the perfect... They're setting up this narrative so brilliantly, it's breathtaking to watch. Because it's like I said before, they've created that dialectic. So what are they going to do? If ET shows up, they can say, I told you so. If someone comes along and advances an advanced human technology, they can say, I told you so.
Wow. Yeah.
So, you know, they're
doubling down.
Yeah, they're doubling down and they're buttressing their own power once again.
Amazing. What's fascinating is the continuity from 1960, you know, in that era, we're going out 60 years here. Mm-hmm. And here we are in the middle of it. But they were grappling, Kennedy was grappling with it, trying to get the UFO file directly from the CIA, saying, we need to share this with the Soviets because I don't want the Russians thinking we're bombing, you know, their nuclear targets if they see a UFO. It's infinitely practical.
Right. Of course it is. Yeah. Of course it is. And you can bet your bottom dollar that one reason that the hotline between Moscow and Washington was established was to be able to control these types of problems.
Oh, interesting.
You know, I go back to that case in Bielokorovice in the Ukraine, where prior to the collapse of the Soviet Union, you had a UFO show up and start the launch sequence.
Amazing.
In a bunch of Soviet ICBMs. You know, and, you know, Russian crews scrambling to shut this down.
Wow.
You know, otherwise we're in a thermonuclear war with the United States, which nobody wants. So...
Fascinating.
So what's Andropov going to do? Oh, sorry about that launch...
You've mentioned some very interesting things about Andropov. By the way, I also want to say that you brought the McCarthy UFO connection to the public attention. That really wasn't out there anywhere.
Anywhere, no. I'm the only one that's pointed out that the real reason that the Eisenhower administration staged the Army McCarthy hearings is he was getting, obviously, I mean, you cannot read those transcripts, which I hasten to remind people were only declassified in 2003.
Wow.
Okay. That's 50 years later. If you were trying to figure out what was all this flap about, you didn't have access to the transcripts that would tell you. Mm-hmm. When you read the transcripts, it is crystal clear, if you're willing to maintain a little bit of open-mindedness about reading between the lines and the messaging going back and forth mm-hmm. between McCarthy and the U.S. Army. It's very clear what's going on.
Well, you definitely clarified that he's talking about Project Blue Book.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he comes right out and says it.
Yeah.
You know, and then he mentions dates like July 3rd, 1947. And you know, how does this senator get stuck on that date? And why is he grilling radar experts from Fort Monmouth who are going to New Mexico during that time period? You know, why is he harping on this? You know, well, it's obvious why he's harping on it.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's so much a part of the deep state at that time. Because, like I say, you've got two strategic problems confronting the country. You've got the communist bloc, and you've got the UFO. Mm-hmm. So any tinkering or probe into either one is going to be extremely sensitive, especially if you've got a maverick like McCarthy, who is not going to be controlled by anybody mm-hmm. in charge of it.
Right.
With
he's like a bull in a china shop. He wants
more action. Yeah. Well, incidentally, with good, strong connections to J. Edgar Hoover and, you know, the whole Venona signals intercept thing, as I've been arguing. So, you know, you've got to shut all that down. Just absolutely have to. And to make sure it stays shut down, what do? You vilify the man.
Yes.
You paint him as a monster so that nobody looks too closely.
Right. Especially towards the end when he's coming out with revelation after revelation.
Well, exactly.
This is fascinating because, you know, when I think about it, there's a thread there that brings us into this period from the new period.
Yes.
And part of that thread, Forrestal.
Yes.
The first defense secretary who, in the UFO file aspect, he got kind of booted out because he was like, we should share this stuff. And he had a totally different reaction on the UFO file side. Or there are documents that support that in the background.
Yeah.
But what we know about him is that he was close friends with JFK.
Yep.
And
McCarthy.
And McCarthy, right. So we have that thread, Forrestal, JFK, McCarthy, but McCarthy has Cohn, and Cohn has the thread into President Trump.
Yep.
That's an interesting thread. And, you know, we've mentioned before this Torbit document that came out kind of like a 70s WikiLeaks. And it still sits there in the middle of it. And the department it talks about DISC. And that Roy Cohn was associated with Defense Intelligence Security Command. And that's where this whole kind of control of the UFO file piece and the defense of the UFO file piece falls.
The Torbit document, you know, that and the Gemstone file, those things are just, they're not sitting there, they're squatting there.
Right.
I mean, they're like big, ugly toads that you cannot miss. But you don't know quite what to make out of them when you encounter them.
What are your thoughts on the Gemstone file?
Well, that's another weird one in the mix because it's, as you pointed out before we started the show, this thing is connected to Onassis, and mm-hmm. again, that's an obvious Kennedy connection. Mm-hmm. And Onassis, the other obvious connection with Onassis is it's an obvious Nazi international connection.
Right.
And the other thing about the Gemstone file that I've never, ever been able to figure out adequately is what is the real reason for its fascination, its fixation with Howard Hughes?
Yeah.
You know, it makes a lot of allegations, like Hughes is investigating the use of directed energy weapons and space and satellites and all of this, which, again, you know, that would be something that he in particular would be interested in, just mm-hmm. because he was that kind of individual. Mm-hmm. And then you add to that that very, very weird James Bond film. What was
Diamonds Are Forever.
Diamonds Are Forever, yeah, where you've got Jimmy Dean playing this Howard Hughes character holed up in a penthouse in Las Vegas. The parallels were too obvious.
Yes.
You know, especially that they're making a movie out of this after the Gemstone File comes out.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's really incredible. So what's he doing there? I don't know, but it's very, very weird. And let's go all the way, since we're talking Gemstone File and James Bond movies, let's talk about John Glenn on Frasier.
Yes.
Right. You know, if you have, folks, if you haven't seen that episode of Frasier, go watch it.
This is so weird.
Totally weird.
Is it the weirdest moment on television? Possibly.
It really is. Because in the guise of a comedy episode, what Glenn is really doing, in my opinion, is he's rattling on and on while Frasier and Roz are having an argument that you can't see. And Glenn is talking about strange, weird stuff that all the moon astronauts, you know, and other astronauts were seeing in outer space. He's going, you know, on the microphone. And they're recording all of this. And at the end of this, he says, I'm going to need that recording.
There's disclosure for you.
There's disclosure for you. Yeah. And, you know, and Glenn at the time is a U.S. senator.
Wow.
When he records that episode.
And they try to draft him running for the presidency.
I mean,
this was a guy who was slated, you know, as the hero leader to come in. Mm-hmm. They had this all worked out in advance.
Mm-hmm.
But that is fascinating. I saw a clip of Buzz Aldrin talking on Conan O'Brien, and this is a weird one when they say, oh, you know, the host is saying, oh, I remember, you know, watching the moon landing on TV, and he turns to him and says, no, you weren't. We weren't able to send pictures from the moon. You were watching an animation. I mean, there's some disclosure for you.
There's a little disclosure for you, yeah. And what's interesting about it is that if you look at the Buzz Aldrin disclosure there, and if you look at the John Glenn disclosure on Frasier, what do you have? You have an entirely consistent with the narrative disclosure, because bring John Glenn forward to today. Is he really saying anything different on the Frasier episode than Luis Elizondo is being published in? No, not really.
Right.
Not really. Yeah. Is Buzz Aldrin really saying anything different than that movie that was released in Australia called Dish?
Right.
Have you ever seen that movie?
Yes. It's fascinating.
Well, it's fascinating because in that movie, you see the Australian feed that was beamed to every television set in Australia during the moon landing. And you see that live feed with that little thing that comes rolling across the bottom of the screen.
Right.
The Coke bottle.
Yes.
Okay. they were good enough to find that feed and put it in the movie.
Right.
So, in other words, Buzz Aldrin isn't saying anything new. He's just adding to a narrative that others have already put out there. So, in other words, it's narrative reinforcement.
Exactly.
Nothing has changed.
There's been a few incidents like that. Mm-hmm. Alternative 3 was fascinating in that it presented itself, again, it's a mockumentary, but it presents itself as the real thing and freaks people out on the level of the War of the Worlds and Orson Welles in 1938. But this is in 1979, and it seems to cut really close to the truth.
It cuts so close to the truth. I don't know how familiar you are with the whole Alternative 3 saga, but it cuts so close to the truth that when ITV began getting letters from all over Great Britain and then subsequently the world once the mockumentary got out, that the producers had their mail opened and their phones tapped, probably by MI5. And then one of the producers goes on to write a book about Alternative 3, and he discloses in his foreword that ever since he participated in this hoax, his life has fallen apart.
Wow.
Because he's being surveilled, his mail is being opened, his phones are being tapped, he cannot get a job, and on it goes.
Fascinating.
So in other words, I think, again, a group of independent people, I really do think ITV was just thinking, okay, let's have some, you know, April's Fool fun in that weird, twisted British sense of humor sort of way. and they came a little too close to what the MOD did not want anyone talking about.
So, it's amazing in that period because you have the late 70s, early 80s, a kind of disclosure that they're going for. And then Star Wars becomes the piece out of that.
Yep.
Well, we sort of set the culture up for it. And now here's Star Wars. And here's Reagan talking about aliens every other time he gets to the podium.
Or with Gorby.
And with Gorby, exactly. How long did they keep that one under wraps? 30,
quite
35 years? Wow.
It was quite a while.
But Reagan, in his position, somehow he's thinking there, I know I'm the one who can bring this across to the public. Mm-hmm. So the stuff they're showing him, he's thinking, we don't need to keep this under wraps. I could be able to do this. Mm-hmm. And eventually this gets scrapped. Mm-hmm. And Star Wars hangs out there as a very interesting anomaly, SDI. But apparently it's part of its major development is directly related to the UFO file.
Oh, I think so. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because if you look at the timing of Star Wars, which ostensibly was as a defense system against Soviet missiles.
Right.
I don't think that was it at all. I think the real intention from the start was this was another layer of narrative to develop technologies and get the funding for it and to begin a public release of information. Mm-hmm. Because it's very interesting and peculiar to me that when Reagan is talking in this manner about alien threats, that is precisely what he's talking about, alien threat.
Right.
And every time that he and Gorbachev apparently discussed it, which they did, it was again in terms of a threat.
Hmm.
So in other words, whether we believe them or not, and I do personally think that Reagan was sincere, and I think that Gorbachev was sincere when they, especially Gorbachev later divulged the fact that, yes, the president did tell me and talk to me about this and asked me if we would help in those circumstances, and I assured him that we would. Really?
Henry Kissinger almost fainted when he said it.
Yeah.
Camera. You've never seen a look like that.
Yeah. Hush. We don't go there. There have been these odd releases. Let's remember another Russian that made an odd release like that out of the clear blue. And they never followed up. And that was Dmitry Medvedev.
Yes.
About a month before the Chernobyl incident with the meteor.
Mm-hmm.
And he's chattering away, oh yeah, we've got to develop meteor defenses and we got to do it right now. And, you know, Russia's willing to cooperate internationally. But if we don't get any, you know, we're just going to have to do it ourselves. And how are we going to shoot them down? You say, well, you know, we can use some of our missiles or some of the other things that we got. What other things?
Hold on.
Yeah, hold on there, Dmitry. What other things are we talking about here?
You know, I noticed they put Putin in after him after that. They were like,
oh, yeah.
Let's switch him back.
Switch back to Putin, you know, who keeps a very tight lip on talking about anything that the Russians have up their sleeve.
Mm-hmm.
The narrative is... The narrative, I think they are very, very carefully prepping.
You know, fascinating.
You know me. I'm more inclined philosophically to believe in the ET threat narrative.
Mm-hmm.
But why are they pushing it so much?
Right.
You know, who says ET has to be unfriendly?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe ET is friendly to certain portions of the human population. Nazis, for example. And, you know, not the rest of us. You know, who knows? But the problem is they're prepping only one kind of narrative. And that you know, that kind of bothers me.
There's no question. The CIA being so involved with the threat part after denying it for so many decades.
Right.
That's a weird indicator. DHS yes. getting in there, and then suddenly the continuity of government documents tumbling out of the W. Bush library. What is the timing on that?
Well, I don't know about the timing on it, but I'm like you. I find these, let me put it this way. All of those COG, the continuity of government documents that are spilling out from Bush the Stupid and his misadministration, I can't view that as any other thing than a controlled release.
Mm-hmm.
It's like all this other stuff regarding UFOs and space and COG and DHS that we're seeing right now. To me, this is... they're very carefully prepping a narrative. They're making it look like all of this is just kind of, this is a bit here and that bit there. No, it's controlled and it's timed.
Right.
And again, the reason why I think we have to understand, the elite, the Mr. Globaloney, the Davos set, the Bilderbergers, whatever you want to call them, the elite's narratives are not working.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not working. And as they are failing to maintain their narratives, they're also failing to maintain their power.
Right.
They've unleashed things now that are spinning out of control.
Mm-hmm.
I've no doubt, to give you the example, I've no doubt that they unleashed this whole Ukrainian mess as a means to try to both control Russia and eventually to topple the regime that they see is going to be a problem for their globalist designs down the line. No doubt.
Wow.
The problem.
They want to get Putin out of there.
Oh, yeah. Well, what they don't realize is Putin is not a one-off.
Mm-hmm.
Putin is the Russian state. Mm-hmm. And that's what they have that they're afraid of, and that's what they've got to get rid of. They don't mind Russia. What they want is what they want to get rid of is this idea that there can be a civilizational postmodern state not under their control.
Exactly. They need the monopoly.
They need the monopoly in order for all of their schemes to work. Otherwise, they're out of luck. You know, they've screwed the pooch. Well, this is the problem that they have now. The Ukrainian operation is not going according to their plan.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to keep it going, but the problem is even that's collapsing for their plan to work. And you're seeing fissures in Europe right now. I mean, Europe is between a rock and a hard place. If the Fed raises interest rates, which they're going to do, Europe is between a rock and a hard place.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, Mr. Davos' set is really scrambling, I think, to try
their economy tanks, our economy tanks.
Yeah, they've unleashed a nightmare and they don't know any way out of it. And Henry Kissinger was trying to tell them.
Yeah.
You know, and they're not listening to him. The old guard is dead, folks. You're dealing with a new, you know, David Rockefeller and Zbigniew Brzezinski are gone, and Henry's not long for the world. Mm-hmm. You're dealing with the George Soros, Bill Gates.
Crazy crowd.
These people have no restraints.
They're even crazier than the original
group
of controller elites because those people had decorum in a sense about how they were doing things, and they didn't want to appear a certain way on the public stage.
Right. And what does Klaus Schwab say? Well, Klaus Schwab says, we have the means to compel.
Wow.
Now imagine Henry Kissinger giving that kind of a response public. He never would have done it. He may have pulled Bolsonaro aside and said, oh, God, you know, you can't, you know.
Behind the scenes, he would have. Yeah.
Yeah. Behind the scenes, he would have. But to go public with a threat, no.
Yeah.
No,
Joseph, I like what you're saying here, too, about Schwab, because I think that Schwab is almost insane as much.
Oh, he is.
Yeah.
I mean, you've seen that picture of him and his dad.
Yes, his Nazi dad.
His Nazi general dad, you know, who looks exactly like Schwab, only Schwab doesn't wear a Nazi general's uniform.
Not in public.
Maybe, at least not publicly that we know of. You never know what he wears at home.
That's right.
He's got the little general's epaulets on his bathrobe.
A little SS on the helmet.
A little SS on the helmet. Yeah. He may have an Adolf Hitler table setting, you know, from Berchtesgaden. Who knows? No, it's just crazy. You know, they never would have done this. Mm-hmm. As you say, they had a sense of decorum.
You know,
the whole jig was up if it became too public, and they knew it. But now, no, it's the heavy hand, and these people are exposing themselves for the twits and incompetence that they are. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're grasping for any narrative that's going to gain traction. And I think, you know, the UFO thing, it may not look like it has much traction now, but give them time.
Yeah. Well, they have their puppets working hard on it.
Yep.
We're looking at something, though, with the emergency powers piece, COG and UFO. This is the thread that they want to connect the dots on. And that's why DHS is suddenly involved. DHS was never involved on the UFO side. Yeah. And DHS now, 250,000 employees.
Unreal.
Bloated bureaucracy. You know, they have them busting flea markets and all this other stuff. Forget about the border crisis. Like, let anybody in.
Yeah.
But make sure you shut down, you know, people on the internet looking for UFOs. So we have a weird situation there where they've now assigned this bureaucracy into the UFO story. And then everyone on the UFO side is like, hey, they're having hearings. This is great. Until you figure out, you know, it's inside the lion's mouth of the Department of Homeland Security is where they're doing this.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, that research community around the UFO thing just folded to all of these groups. And the field wasn't, let's face it, it wasn't that great a field anyway.
Right.
But the jumping on to the government narrative is disturbing anyway. What I want to link up and really get your insight on with this is the continuity of government program is set to be activated by NORTHCOM. If we hit an emergency, they change the language. It was originally built for a nuclear emergency back in the 50s and the 40s. And it became, like Department of Homeland Security, this burgeoning bureaucracy underground, but it didn't have any kind of oversight, and it still doesn't.
Right.
And this is the major problem of COG, and that's why, you know, Professor Scott is sort of like crying like John the Baptist in the wilderness about it for years and years. And you couldn't even bring up COG. Now they mention it casually. But for decades, you couldn't. This is the question on COG. Martial law and the continuity of government takeover. We saw, you know, kind of a glimpse of it when Trump had COVID, and there was something weird that took place with the NORTHCOM commander being switched out, and then Trump, after the election, fired the defense secretary, Esper. Can it be that the UFO threat piece, in combination with COG, that's the formula that they need, and that's why you're seeing these two things being rolled out at the same time?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I would go even further by way of speculating out to the end of the twig.
Yes.
If you look at what's happening now to the economy, to the supply chains, would this look any different under martial law?
True.
Answer, no.
No.
So could we already be under it?
Interesting.
Remember, if you're dealing in a scenario where the Biden-Nenko regime does not have actual control of the nuclear arsenal, and let's go all the way back to 9/11 and to Webster Tarpley's thesis, that a phone call to the White House revealed code names that were connected with the American nuclear arsenal, which was having a drill on that day.
Right.
President Bush the stupid has to fly from Sarasota, not back to Washington, D.C., but to Barksdale Air Force Base and then on to Offutt Air Force Base, which are the headquarters for the American nuclear arsenal and the backup headquarters.
Right.
So Webster Tarpley concluded, I think rightly, that what Bush the stupid was doing was reasserting personal presidential control over the nuclear arsenal.
Amazing.
Okay. So if that's the case, what do we have now? We have a continuity of government scenario, which has, as you've pointed out, no oversight. Could it gain control of a nuclear football? Sure. Mm-hmm. Probably. Would it want to gain control in the circumstances of a corrupt, grifting nut who has not got two neurons and synapses that line up, who's currently in the White House, who's blathering about taking control of guns while he claims to have control of the nuclear football? Would you want a man like that with his little sidekick Zelensky over in Kiev talking about making the Ukraine go? Do you want to have that in the hands of that crowd?
Wow.
My answer is no, you
definitely
don't.
Not.
Yeah. Definitely not. And you're going to do anything that you can do to prevent that group from gaining control of it. So, yeah, I think it's a realistic possibility that one reason you're seeing such chaos, you know, this UFO, you can't talk about anything unless we approve of it, and that narrative on top of the geopolitical chaos in the world, I think you're dealing with a very realistic possibility that this is the case. Biden-Nenko is clearly not in charge of this country.
Yeah.
Because he's not even in charge of himself.
Right.
The question is, who is?
They can barely prop this guy up to a telephone.
They can barely prop this guy up and make him say something coherent.
Yeah.
You know, so there's something else going on here. And continuity of government and martial, you know, a kind of covert, quietly exercised martial law is something that I entertain as a speculative possibility.
You know, one of the most curious things about the COG commander now that I've noticed, and it just seems to me it's a weird feature in his bio, is that General Van Herk, who is the NORTHCOM commander and the combatant commander of the United States now, in the activation of COG, he'd be the leader and secure conditions until we could have an election again. Right.
Which can easily be fixed.
Yes. Van Herk, in his background, he comes out of the 509th Bomber Group, which is the same group that Jesse Marcel comes out of. Uh-huh. That thread, Joseph, when you see that, is that a dot? You know.
Oh, look, no. One is an accident.
Yes.
Two's a coincidence, three's a pattern. We've got at least an unusual coincidence here. Add all the other stuff to it? No. No, this is no coincidence. No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Joseph, unbelievable analysis. Now sit tight and let's get into part two here with a blockbuster revelation that may solve the Keksberg UFO mystery once and for all. Dark Journalist subscribers will have part two shortly. Please go to darkjournalist.com and subscribe now. Of course, all of Dr. Farrell's work can be found at GizaDeathStar.com. Please join us Friday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, for the X series. See you soon.